We're so pleased and honored to have Dr. Almirando Ojeda back on the air with us, professor of linguistics at University of California, Davis, where he serves as the founding director of the university's Center for the Study of Human Rights in the Americas. He's the principal investigator of the center's Guantanamo trial, the Guantanamo Testimonials Project. And Dr. Ojeda, for people who didn't get a chance to hear you back in January when we had you on, could you talk just a little bit about the Center for the Study of Human Rights in the Americas and the Testimonials Project?
Sure, and thanks for having me here. The Guantanamo Testimonials Project is the flagship project of the Center for the Study of Human Rights in the Americas at Davis. And the goals of that project are to gather testimony of prisoner abuse at the base, to organize them in meaningful ways, to make them all available online, and to keep them there in perpetuity. We have gathered now testimony by the thousands.
And so, obviously, a tremendous resource for students and faculty there at UC Davis, but as you say, it's also online. Can you give us a
sure,
web address people can find it?
Very simple, humanrights.ucdavis.edu.
Excellent, excellent. And we talked a little back in January about the three alleged suicides of prisoners at Guantanamo back in 2006. Could we just review quickly what was the official finding that led to the suicide, the official report that concluded that those three deaths were by suicide, and what else do we know?
Yes, very, very briefly, there's a piece of mine and truth out that I recommend the listeners to take a look at, but very succinctly, what happened was that on June 10th, 2006, three men were found hanging in their cells at Guantanamo, and the official explanation was that they had killed themselves. However, the Naval's Criminal Investigative Service, the NCIS, came up with a report that raised a number of questions about those circumstances. For example, the prisoners had cloth in their mouths. They were gagged with cloths when they died. Why would they do that? They had their hands tied and so on. They had masks over their faces. This is all very mysterious. If they're going to hang themselves, why suffocate themselves twice? This would have remained there if I hadn't by chance come across an article in the Charleston Post and Courier where the case of one Ali Sali Almari was mentioned. Mr. Almari is a citizen of Qatar that entered lawfully into the United States right after the September 11 attacks. He was eventually declared an enemy combatant by President Bush, and he was captured, interrogated very brutally. And one of the things they did was stuff his mouth with cloth, put some duct tape around it, and try to interrogate him under those circumstances. Well, that, of course, tied the two things in my mind. And people who want to know what I do with that relationship, go to the Truth Out article online.
And Doctor, this is Abby Martin from Media Roots. You've written an excellent piece about Guantanamo speak and the manufacturing of consent, you know, in light of this recent poll that shows the rebranding effort under Obama and people really approve of Guantanamo now. I was wondering if you could touch upon your essay and the Occupy Davis and, you know, just elaborate on what that means.
That's right. We live in a democracy, a formal democracy perhaps, these governments function by the consent of their people. And in order to manufacture the consent of their people, rulers invent a number of terms like self-harm gesture, which is the way suicide is referred to in Guantanamo, or voluntary total fasting, which is the way hunger strikes are referred to, or reconvene tribunals when it's really a new tribunal that's been named in order to take an exonerated prisoner and find him guilty in a second trial. In this article, I talk a little bit about the use of language in these ways.
And some of those terms, you use a term that when I first saw it was highly mysterious to me, irfing. Irfing.
Yes, irfing.
That's a new verb in my vocabulary.
Yes,
what is irfing, Dr. Ojeda?
Irfing comes from the verb to irf, which is E-R-F, and that stands for Emergency Reaction Force. It's a band of individuals that would come into a prisoner's cell in Guantanamo and forcibly extract the prisoner from the cell, usually by beating him unconscious after pepper spraying him, and they tie him and take him wherever he needs to go, which usually is the infirmary at that point. There's been a whole verbal conjugation around ERF, I ERF, you ERF, we're being ERFed.
And I guess in most cases, in other situations, the same conduct might be described as an aggravated assault.
Exactly. It's aggravated battery is what it is.
Yeah. What about for some of the men who have been, it's strange to even use this word in this context, but they've been fortunate enough to be released from Guantanamo. And in that Guantanamo speak in the Manufacture of Consent essay, you talk about some about the terminology that there's concern about, quote, recidivism, and also about those men, quote, returning to the battlefield. How is that part of the Guantanamo speak vocabulary?
That's right. Those two words bring about a number of presuppositions, right? In order to be a recidivist or in order to return to the battlefield, you have to have been in the battlefield in the first place. And as it turns out, very few of these individuals have taken arms anywhere against the United States or anybody else. What happens to their lives is actually utter destruction. There's been a number of studies done on the consequences, even for the people that have been liberated, what happens to their lives.
And so I guess this raises the perhaps obvious but not simple question, why the need for language like this? Why use this kind of language? What's its purpose?
Well, yeah. I believe that torturing another human being is hard to do. It's not something that's in our genes. It's something that we need to be trained to do. But before we're trained to do that, we need to agree to it. We need to consent to it. And language plays a big part in consenting to it. We need to manufacture the consent around torture, not just for the torturer, but to the incredibly large web of support around a torture that extends all the way down to our neighborhoods. Part of the manufacturing of consent is creating an illusion of consent, and that's why this the work done in this station is so important. This is a place where that illusion is shattered.
Doctor, have you seen more, you know, under this rebranding effort with Obama, have you seen more of this language being used, or has this been used the whole time?
With Obama, there's been a deliberate attempt to clean up the act in Guantanamo, and even though some of the excesses have disappeared, for all we know, we really don't know, there's been a number of troubling reports. For example, there was a new camp called Camp 5 Echo that we didn't know about, except for attorneys that came out of it and described dismal conditions for the prisoners, punished for little or no reason whatsoever, extended solitary confinement, and so on. We can talk about that if we had more time, but Camp 5 Echo is the place to look online, look for online.
Interesting. And so one of the things that you said back in January when we had you on the air with us once before, you said that we had to educate our rulers. Mm-hmm. And that phrase has stuck with me. It's reverberated around. I've been thinking about it in different situations. And I suppose I want to pick up on that and ask you, well, what should people do?
There's all sorts of things you can do. The only thing you can't do is nothing. I am an educator, a researcher, so I've put those skills to task. I try to do the testimonials project, try to put the material together for other people to act. What can people do? Well, let me just give you a few examples. Recently, the Gardening Society in Great Britain, and the Brits are famous for their love of gardening, discovered that one of the Geneva rights for prisoners is to have a garden in prison. So they realized that they didn't have this right in Guantanamo, so they packed truckloads of seeds and deliver them to the Defense Department in order to make their point. There's also work underway by some musicians whose music has been used to torture individuals by playing it at incredibly loud volumes. I understand that there's a case underway about a band. I won't name it because it's still in the works, but a band whose music has been used to torture is going to release a new album and announce this this thing. Another thing you can do is participate in an ACLU action called Reckoning with Torture. If you go to the ACLU website, you'll find a number of testimonies that you can record, film yourself in YouTube, and post, and create this counter image about dissent in the population of goodwill in this country.
We're talking with Dr. Almirando Ojeda from the University of California, Davis, founder and director of the University Center for the Study of Human Rights in the Americas. I'm Andy Roth of Project Censored here with Abby Martin of Media Roots. And one of the things that struck me, Almirando, looking back and going down the memory hole and recalling some of the language immediately after 9/11, I was struck by George Bush's speech to the special joint session of Congress on September 20th of 2001, where he said, "Whether we bring our enemies to justice or bring justice to our enemies, justice will be done." And there was tremendous applause in response to that rhetorical flourish. And it seems to me at the time it was ominous enough, but what we know now in terms of targeted killing, indefinite detention without due process, that there's something like, I'll put it in my words, a perverse use of the term brought to justice. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, and it was a missed opportunity. On September 12, 2001, there was enormous support for the United States, enormous sympathy for what we had gone through. And that was the golden opportunity, the golden moment to actually bring the full force of justice against the true perpetrators of the September 11 events. What we unleashed instead was the full force of abuse and torture on a number of people, some perhaps guilty, the vast majority innocent. I say this with such conviction because there's been 600 individuals that have been released from Guantanamo. If they were a hardcore terrorist, they would have wreaked an enormous amount of damage against the United States and its interests. 600 loose terrorists would do enormous amount of harm. Think of what 20 did 10 years ago.
Doctor, we're talking about the manufacture of consent, Guantanamo speak, and you know what people can do to close Guantanamo Bay once and for all. The thing is, it seems like the pre-propaganda that torture is somehow acceptable in a post 9/11 world. How can we start to combat that propaganda? That, you know, torture doesn't work. We already know that. So how do we start to peel back this propaganda that people have just accepted that this is now the new reality?
I think we need to return to core values. I think torture is wrong, and even if it worked, I would claim it shouldn't be used. I mean, imagine that somebody would make the argument that women should be raped because if it weren't for that, then the woman would be killed. In order to save the woman's life, we should allow the rape to run. That's an incredible argument. Nobody would make it in their same mind. I think the same argument should be made of torture. Even if there were some positives to it, it shouldn't be done. It's just wrong. In addition to that, it's illegal. It's criminal procedure. And, of course, we know it doesn't work. Torture was invented in order to extract false confessions, not to extract true confessions. Ask any professional interrogator, and he'll agree.
We've been in dialogue with Dr. Almirando Ojeda here in the studio from the University of California, Davis, and the Center for the Study of Human Rights in the Americas. Dr. Almirando Ojeda, do you want to give us the web address for the,
sure,
the Testimonials Project once
sure
more?
humanrights.ucdavis.edu. There's lots of people who have served in Guantanamo and lots of people who don't feel good about what they did. You might know some. Tell them to come our way. We're ready to listen. We won't be judgmental. We'll just record their experiences. Humanrights.ucdavis.edu.
All right. Thank you so much, Almirando.
Thanks, Almirando.